You're at the Coaching Inn, 3D Coaching's virtual pub, where we enjoy conversations with people who are engaged in the world of coaching.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Coaching Inn. I'm your host, Claire Pedrick. Today, I'm in conversation with Oscar Trimboli in Australia. I was introduced to Oscar by Shaney Crawford, who sent me a message on LinkedIn and went, "You have to meet this man. He has to come to the Coaching Inn." So welcome, Oscar.
Thank you, Sean. And thank you, Claire. I'm looking forward to listening to your questions today.
Well, and thank you for the copies of the book that you've sent to me, which we'll be sharing with listeners who... you and I can work out together how we're going to share them with our listeners. But really great to have a look at your book. So I love it. Oscar's book is called How to Listen. And there are sound bites in it that sound like they've come from me, which I love because I always like it when I agree with somebody's book. I love the bit about seeing and hearing and sensing. But my question to you is what started you out in the journey to listening?
You have to kind of go to April 2008. I'm in a boardroom at Microsoft. We were on a video conference, 18 people across Sydney, Seattle, and Singapore. And there's a lot of people in the room, lots of people with laptops furiously doing unnatural things to Excel, trying to bend budgets into political context, growth context, market context, and a meeting's supposed to go for 90 minutes. And at the 20-minute mark, my vice president, my boss, Tracy, looks me straight in the eye across the boardroom table and says, "Oscar, we need to talk immediately after this meeting." So, Claire, from that moment on, I did not listen to another word in what happened in the budget meeting, because the only thing that was going through my head was, I'm about to get fired. How many weeks of salary have I got left? And who are the five people I need to call to kind of find paid employment? I think the answer was 8 weeks salary. And by some miracle of nature, the meeting finished at the 70-minute mark, not 90. And everybody kind of packed up their equipment and started to head out of the room. And Tracy said, "Oscar, make sure you close the door because what I have to say to you is very important." And I went, "Oh, great." And as I stepped back only halfway towards the boardroom table, Tracy said to me, "You have no idea what you did at the 20-minute mark, do you?" And I thought, I'm getting fired and I don't even know why. And I sat down and Tracy said to me, "Oscar, if you could code how you listen, you could change the world." What I heard was, "Woohoo, I haven't been fired." And honestly, I didn't think anything of this listening stuff for about 3 weeks because I'd got this huge uplift in my budget because I didn't pay attention. And then the chief financial officer asked me to come and audit his listening in his team meeting, to which I agreed. And I started to take notes and I realized, oh, I'm coding how to listen. The difference between hearing and listening is action. I hope I've honored Tracy. And, you know, we've got 32,000 people who've participated in our research study about what gets in their way when it comes to listening. We've coded it into jigsaw puzzle games and we've coded it into 100-odd episodes of podcasts. We've coded it into 3 books. Tracy did want me to code it into software and that'll be the next step in the journey. So that's how I got started, Claire. I thought I was getting fired. And for leaders out there who might be listening, or coaches, what you say and what they hear are two completely different things, as I proved.
Yes. I love that story on many levels.
Oh, which level should we chat about? There are other backstories in my migrant heritage. There are backstories in growing up in... and going to a school with 23 nationalities. There are stories about how I Would have team meetings in our contact center at Microsoft, and everybody had to listen to customer calls for an hour before we came in. There's many stories, but I think that's the moment where I went, oh, okay, there's something I can go towards rather than go away from.
It's the irony that makes me smile that your breakthrough in listening came through when you didn't listen.
Well,
Nice.
life has a way of teaching us things in ways we don't anticipate. And I think my lesson was the curiosity when Brian, the CFO, asked me, "Hey, can you come and listen to my team meeting?" And there's a whole backstory there where I fought him for about three times in our communication. But he said to me, "Hey, Oscar, I can't fix the top line of your budget, but we can invest for growth." And he was speaking my language then, and I went, well, okay, if he's going to invest for growth, the least I can do is go and audit his listening. So, yeah, that's where the journey started. And where are we at? 2008. Yeah, we're a good nearly 15 years down the track now.
So, what did audit listening look like, sound like,
Ooh.
feel like?
It was an A4 piece of paper. And when I started off, what I always do in group context is I map the room, like literally where is everybody sitting on a piece of paper. If you speak, you get a dot. If you ask a question, you get a question mark. And if you ask a clarifying question, you get an upside down question mark. And what I notice is where's the gravity? So that map will really quickly show you that who's not being listened to, who's not speaking up in that map that we draw. And what I also map is each third or quarter of the meeting. So if it's a half an hour meeting, we'll map each 10 minutes. And if it's a 1 hour meeting, we will map each 15 minutes. And what I map is how many people haven't spoken at each of those time sequences and see if that number's static or increases or is complete by the time the conversation completes. The other thing I was auditing back then was how long or short the question is, meaning sometimes they ask double barrel, triple barrel questions, and you're just kind of like, I'm not even sure what the question is, let alone the answer. So I was always curious who attempted to answer it versus who wanted to clarify. Did you mean the first bit, the second bit, the third bit? How's A, B, and C connected? Or is it, and those kinds of things. So that is how, in a very rudimentary way, we noticed, or I noticed, because Tracy said to me, if you could code how I listen. And what I did very quickly was, okay, so what does the literature say, whether that's academic or practitioner literature about how people listen? If I get into a topic, I go pretty deep pretty quick. And there didn't seem to be a deep overlap between practitioner orientations and academic orientations. Academic orientations tend to come from a therapeutic psychology, psychiatry, some modality that was from a therapy rather than necessarily a commercial or organizational outcome. And I speculate, my hypothesis is that listening needs to progress rather than just being what people might see in a Netflix video of what a psychologist or a psychiatrist get. Because I always joke to people, you know, listening in the workplace is not therapy. And if you're trying to do therapy, you're not serving yourself or them unless you're certified. And if you're certified in therapy, then you'll be choiceful in whether that's useful or not. But in exploring all the literature, there's talk about listening being situational, relational, contextual. It's such a dynamic orientation. You have to be about listening. And in the book, we talk about it. What distinguishes good listeners from great listeners is their situational and relational flexibility, their orientation to notice what's going to be useful, not just for the other, but for the system or the group that they're operating in. And for me, my nerdy parts, that was the fun in doing, nearly 1,000 qualitative surveys and reviewing them line by line in spreadsheets, and the quantitative. And my favorite statistic is three quarters of people think they're well above or above average listeners. But if you ask the question the other way, as a speaker, how would you rate the other people's listening? Only 12% of them rate somebody above or well above average when it comes to listening. So there's a very different self-awareness because we don't have, as we do in math, we have four operators: add, divide, subtract, and multiply. It's really clear. And in language context, whether that's English or other languages, we have syntax that helps us. In music, there's sheet music and the way notes work together. In chemistry, we have the periodic table of elements. In communication, there's nothing as concrete as that. So it's little wonder we're not great at listening.
So many. How long have you got?
As my wife says, Oscar, you could talk about listening for the rest of your life. I said, well, that's the plan.
Yes. I've been doing some work around the sound of conversations and the sound of how people pass from one to the other. And I'm definitely going to go away and think about your dots and your upside down question marks.
Yeah, I've got a little video that I talk over. I'll share that with you. That's got an
Thank you.
example of that happening over time, where I'm coding a theoretical conversation.
Oh,
Tell me
amazing.
more about the sound of conversation. I'm fascinated.
It connects to what you've said in your book. So for me, there's something about the offer, about the handing over the conversation from the listener to the facilitator of the conversation hands the conversation over to the other person as they listen, and then only takes it back when that's appropriate. So you've got a bit in your book about okay not being a great way of responding. And okay isn't a great way of responding for a lot of reasons. And one of the reasons I notice from watching lots and lots of recordings of dialogues in gallery view, so you can see the eyes of both people, and so you can watch the toing and froing. Offering sound like a comma. So and so they leave the sound with the other person, whereas okay is a stopping sound. So if I say okay, you're going to go, she's waiting to say something else. And there's some really simple and very interesting stuff about the music of coaching. And I'm just about to engage in dialogue with a musician who takes notes about conversations like you do and completely differently from how you do, I'm sure, to
Yeah, I
see what
bet.
that can teach us.
Can we kind of play with something together?
Please.
I have a sense, and if I won a lottery and had the opportunity to do a PhD, this is what I'd do it in. I sense that people who have a second language listen with a different granularity to people who are only dialoguing in one language and they've only ever had one language. And I want to be careful about how I explain a language. So a language may be music, a language may be math, a language may be chemistry, and a language may be your native tongue as well. And because I'm where I'm located, and no doubt where you're located as well, we operate across multiple cultures. We operate across multiple contexts, and people who may not have the same home language that we speak in a dialogue. And often I'm in situations, particularly in group work, where the person is struggling to find the words in the system language. Typically it's English, but it may not be. It may be French, particularly in global NGOs and sporting systems and all of that, French and Spanish and other languages. And when I'm in that situation and the person is struggling, I ask them to pause, collect their thoughts, and then say it in their home language. Because once they do, they sense it very differently, and they find the spoken language system words really quickly. So, because they go and connect with the feeling of when they said that before. But I also believe, like sedimentary rock in an archaeology dig, because you've got these extra layers through other language context, you listen in a completely different way. That's my speculation. What do you hear? What do you see? What do you feel when I say that?
I think that's so interesting. I'm just thinking about watching people listening in languages I don't understand. I'm also thinking, as you're talking, about if we listen so that the other person understands, which is often the purpose of listening, that's a beautiful description, because they don't need to be seeking the same language as us to understand it. So that makes me think about that. And the other thing it makes me think about is if really deep listening is about what we see and hear and sense, we can see and hear and sense when we don't understand what they're saying anyway. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, and in the book, there's an example where somebody says to me, "Be prepared, I'm just going to vomit on you," and they did, and it went for about 25 minutes where I was literally present. But halfway through, there was a shift in their body state, and I could have missed it if I was just fixated on the words, but there was a shift. And when they complete, they go, "Oh, wow, glad I got that out." And I said, "Oh, I just noticed something about halfway through." And they go, "Oh, what did you notice?" I said, "Oh, your body shifted and you did this." And they go, "Yeah, that's when I decided I'm sick of my own excuses and I actually made a decision." And I thought, wow, if they didn't have that reflected back to them, how more convicted they were about that decision with somebody else noticing, meaning that as we work with people, when they feel seen, heard, and valued, it's because you've listened to what they think and what they mean, not what they've said. What they've said is a series of ingredients. What matters is the recipe and the menu that ultimately that places. And that's why I think for people who have multiple languages, they just have this incredible richness that someone like me, who has a monolingual approach, can never seek to understand. Although both my stepchildren went on exchange in and had to learn German and French and later Hindi, and I see how they process the world differently. But they process the world differently because they learned music first, and that gave them a way to think about learning a language that wasn't something that they grew up with and their parents and their extended family taught them. So I have these, the sedimentary rock matters to me. I often want to go a lot further down into the layers that people may be staying at the surface on.
What a beautiful story. The vomiting for 20 minute person.
That was their words, not mine. And they said, "Put your hazmat suit on," which was pre-COVID days too. So it always sticks in my head. And the example I was thinking about, the person in the most recent example was speaking in Hebrew, and their language flow in a written format goes from left to right, not from right to left, not left to right. And I often wonder with Sanskrit and with Japanese and other languages where the orientation is very different, how much nuance we miss because we have a language orientation from an individual perspective rather than a collective perspective. As an example, when you look at multi-layered cultures that are high context cultures like the Japanese or the Korean or the Chinese or the indigenous Aboriginal communities of Australia as an example as well. I have lots that the aunties and uncles have taught me about their ways of Dadiri, which means listen to your lands, listen to your people, and listen to yourself. The thing they talk about is, Oscar, it's not those separate parts, it's all completely integrated. You can't think of one without the other two. And again, in my way of thinking, I value the deconstruction because then it makes sense to me. But in collective cultures, it's the integrity and the integration of all of those things that we necessarily aren't conscious of when we're listening across cultures that we need to be much more conscious of, particularly to check in for what they heard rather than what we said.
Just made sense of something. Thank you.
Say more.
So we have run some of our training in Australia. So we have Australians on lots of our training, but some of our training we've run in Australian time. And working with a colleague who is in Australia, we felt that we should respect that it was an Australian course, even though people were on it globally, because it was in Australian time. So we use the acknowledgement of the lands and the context that is used in Australia, respecting those who've come before. And it made something different for delegates from other places. So we still do that. So I'm running a course at the moment, doesn't have any Australians on it. It's slightly different because we've taken out especially the peoples of, which was in the acknowledgement that we used when we were running it in Australia. But I think there's been something different about those courses because I wonder what, because I'm just thinking, you're a very good listener, by the way. We're encouraging everybody to acknowledge conversations and systems and everything that have come before in a very human way, because you can get very organizational development about systems, can't you? But there's a
Yes, the North
humanity.
system, the South system, the West system, and all those other kind of mechanical overlays. And yet our organizational systems are nothing more than the oral traditions that we pass on through the culture, which is no different from 60,000 years of dreaming and the wonderful gift that my Indigenous brothers and sisters give us to go. The story helps you make sense of your past, your present, and your future, and how you and those around you fit into that. And the best storytelling cultures are the best listening cultures because they're training multiple generations on how to be present, to listen to their elders. And in the context I'm talking about, our Indigenous communities in Australia and our Maori cousins and our Polynesian cousins, there is a tuning that the elders do to bring silence to the circle before it commences. And it's much longer than what you would at the commencement of any meeting in an organizational system because they're bringing the presence of history and the stories they're going to tell from the past, which have all been handed down. And in organizational systems, I think we get overly sophisticated where we're trying to map it and put it into software and create hierarchies or diagrams. And the only way you make sense of all of that is the tradition of telling stories. And the tradition in a workplace is How do things get done here? Why do people get promoted? Why do people get fired? They're all stories. You can put all the organizational values you want on the wall, yet a story brings them to life and helps people understand how it makes sense. So I'm very grateful. I'm on Wadawurrung country, and it's a river system. And there's an additional element of the lands that the aunties and uncles have taught me about the traditions of the fish and how they keep the lands for the next generation. And I think in organizational systems, we orientate closely to the present and we forget our past and our future. And we miss a big opportunity. The flip side is, if you look at the really high performing systems in terms of financial ROI, they always have longevity in the leadership team. They're not swapping them out all the time. And it's those ones that swap it out all the time because they're only in the present. They're not acknowledging past and future. There's a sense, a tradition that they're not listening to in the past or for in the future. So, yeah, I'm delighted that it's helped you make sense of what's really powerful. The Inuit communities in North America, the Eskimo communities have these traditions as well. The tribal elders in the Amazon and in the first tribes, particularly that I'm aware of in Tanzania and the communities around that, they have great traditions where silence is a sign of wisdom, respect, and authority. Whereas in the West, silence is a cue to lack of understanding, insight, quality, speed, whatever they may overlay on that, but it's a false overlay. We have all this negative language around silence that's called the awkward silence, the pregnant pause, the deafening silence. There's no language in an English context that showcases and gives honor to the power of silence. It's continuously viewed in a context that's not productive.
I agree. And when I was writing I've just got another book out called The Human Behind the Coach, which I co-wrote with Lucia Baldelli. And we've got a chapter in there about silence. And one of the things that I felt really strongly needed to be in the chapter on silence was that just because you're not talking doesn't mean it's silence. And you've just described cultures who in their tradition have got a deep silence, not just an I'm not talking silence.
And I'll bring in the meta point. So I'll give you a really simple example. I'm part of a process where I'm handing over some work to other people. And tomorrow, they will be presenting. I've set them up for success. I'm very comfortable that they're going to do an amazing job. And on Friday, I just sent both of them a text and said, "Do you want me to be present?" And the reply back from both of them near instantaneously was, "No, we don't want you to present. We are presenting." And I went back and I said, "Okay." Had a phone call today. And I said, "Is there anything else I can do to set you up to be successful tomorrow?" And they said, "No, we're great. We're all good." I said, "Just last Friday, I sent you a text that said, 'Do you want me to be present?' And you came back and said, 'No, I'm okay to present.' I said, 'My only invitation for you and my wish is that tomorrow when you present, you are present.'" And we had a very long laugh about that.
That's going to make it into a book, isn't it?
Maybe not. Claire, earlier on, you said, "Oh, you're a good listener." Or what am I doing that's signaling that to you? Because not everyone can see us.
We're co-creating this conversation. So I'm listening to you, and you're listening to me, and some things are emerging from that space. And can I be really honest? Not everybody engages in podcasts like that when they're a guest.
Meaning a two-way dialogue or
Yeah, I
something
mean,
else.
because if you've come to promote your whatever, the quality that comes out of the co-creation that comes out of the silence isn't always present.
And if you imagine a couple of people you know who listen, what do you think they're taking away from our conversation if they were kind of going to summarize it in a sentence or?
Answer that, or I could respond to what I've just noticed. I'm to answer your question, but I am going to just make an observation. I don't think you know what you're going to say next. I think that your that's the listening is demonstrated in the responding to what's emerging, if that does a tiny little answer to your question. What do we
Yeah,
think?
and I think it answers both questions to some extent too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But you're going to build, so let me not interrupt.
Well, my build is to encourage the listeners to build, actually, and to join in the conversation.
So
Because
what should they email to you? And we've got some books to give away.
we have got some books to give away. I think I would love to hear from listeners. What's your biggest insight from this? Not from what we've said, but from what you've built out of what we've said. So, no books if you say, Oscar said this. So that's the task. Are we in agreement, Oscar?
Kinda.
Kinda. Build,
Kinda.
build.
No, clarification.
Yeah.
If you were to say that again for the audience, what is your expectation that they would email you? You've been very clear on what not to say.
Email us info@3dcoaching.com with the heading listening. And we would love to hear one thing that you know now that you didn't know before as a result of something that you've built out of this conversation.
Thank you.
Well, thank
Clarifies it for
you.
me.
I've got some lovely
I,
copies. To
as
send
you can
out.
see, Claire, I could talk about this for the rest of my life. And my wish for all of these conversations is that hosts notice that I'm just present to the dialogue. And thanks to Dame Evelyn Glennie, somebody from the north of England who I interviewed, profoundly deaf. She taught me how to listen with my whole body. It took a while, but when I listen, even through a mediated environment like the video that we're on right now, when I bring my presence and I connect my whole being to the conversation, yes, listening is a skill. Yes, listening is a strategy. Yes, listening is a practice. But for me, when I'm being listening, I can change many perspectives. And the most important one is to change my own. So when I always leave these conversations with my perspective changed, and the perspective you change for me is to reinforce and continue this curiosity about the role of language as a way to unlock more potent ways of listening. When by being present to you, Claire, you changed me, I know it's a great conversation. So thanks for listening.
Well, thank you for coming and thank you everyone for listening. Oscar's book is How to Listen, Discover the Hidden Key to Better Communication. So get those emails coming in. Thank you, Oscar. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
If you've enjoyed what you've heard today, we'd love you to share the podcast with a friend or leave a comment on social media. And if you'd like to become a regular at the Coaching Inn, you can subscribe on Podbean and all major podcast channels. We look forward to welcoming you next time. You've been listening to The Coaching Inn, 3D Coaching's virtual pub. For more information, check out 3dcoaching.com.